Hey there, coaches. I'm really excited to have George Kuros on today's podcast. George is the author of a book called The Innovator's Mindset. And in that book, he identifies eight characteristics of that innovator's mindset. They include empathetic, problem finders, risk takers, networked, observant, creators, resilient, and reflective. This Thanksgiving, I have been reflecting a lot on the idea of network and the network that I have created as a basketball coach over these years. From the coaches on my staff to coaches half a world away, I'm lucky to have connections with all these great coaches that I can learn from and bounce ideas off of. So this Thanksgiving weekend, I want to say thanks to all those coaches in my basketball network. George will talk about different ways coaches can approach the game with an innovator's mindset, and all of them are great, and I wouldn't weigh one over the other. But if you're a young coach or an older coach that feels like they're on an island, I would really encourage you to build that network. I'd encourage you to connect with coaches that you respect, and then I'd also encourage you to connect with coaches that maybe you admire from afar. Some of these coaches might not respond, but most will. Because if there's one group of people that likes talking for hours on end about their profession and their craft and what they do, it's basketball coaches. We are fortunate to have George Kuros on today's podcast. Originally an educator in Canada, George is an innovative teaching, learning, and leadership consultant based in Florida now. I had the opportunity to participate in a workshop he led with my school district last month. And I'm currently reading his book, The Innovator's Mindset, easy for me to say. I've really enjoyed applying his message in my classroom and then also in my basketball coaching. George, thanks for talking some basketball with us today. How's everything in Florida?
Hey, well, just we got a tropical storm, which is like I think we're okay. It's like just passing by us right now. There's a hurricane last month, so other than that, it's been awesome. Other day, other than the hurricane days, has been, you know, right. So like we're lucky we never faced the brunt of any of it. It's actually one of the reasons we moved to Orlando is we're a little too Canadian for like hurricanes.
Right. It's not so, ready for that yet.
But no, we're good.
Yeah. Sweet. So first of all, you know, some people might be like, well, why do you have George on there? And so we actually struck up a conversation and we talked a little basketball, a little hoops. And so just kind of tell us a little bit about your passion for the game.
Well, actually it's funny because, you know, I get asked to speak on education podcasts and, you know, I do it and stuff like that. But when I was asked to speak on a basketball podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm all in. Like sometimes I just don't want to talk about education. Right. And like, obviously there's lessons from, you know, all aspects of, you know, coaching, what we do in basketball and, you know, how we tie that to school. So, I grew up in Canada. So of course I had to play hockey, you know, as a kid, cause you like, or else they kick you out of the country. That's probably one of the reasons I left. I'm not a big hockey fan. I watch hockey, but it's probably one of my least favorite sports, to actually watch, even though I'll watch pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. But then I was, you know, I grew tall before everyone else. And, you know, obviously was kind of pushed into basketball. Now tall in small town Canada, I'm 6'4", right?
Right.
Which I wouldn't even be a guard in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I started playing and, I was really good as a kid and gave me confidence, and it was because I was taller than everybody else. Right. And so, you know, and that's like one of the things, but as it was nice because it gave me a confidence. And then I actually, you know, later started to develop some skill in it too. And yeah, I just love basketball. I was blessed with really great coaches. So I ended up, you know, going into education. And I think I told you this when I saw you. Mm-hmm. I remember actually getting a teaching job and I really wanted to coach basketball. And the principal who was hiring me said, you know, we're gonna actually offer you the job, but I'm a little concerned you're more interested in being a basketball coach than a teacher. I'm like, I'm not going to argue with you.
That's right.
Probably part of it too. So, I coached for several years and in small town Saskatchewan, small town Alberta. And then I actually ref for several years. And I refed and I was very into that. And to the point where I was doing university games, I was hoping at some point I'd actually break into the NCAA. for that. But then I kind of hit this crossroads where it was like, are you going to dedicate yourself to reffing or are you going to take this path in speaking? And, you know, as you saw, I'd rather, 80% of people cheer for me than half of the place booing me.
Right, so exactly.
I was like, yeah, I think I'll stick with speaking, right? Because like, as long as I've spoke, you may not resonate, but I've never had anyone boo me so far. So that's pretty good.
Right, yeah. Hey, real quick, what's one thing that people maybe don't understand about reffing?
I think for reffing, it's like a lot of times, the people get on refs for making mistakes and they're just like coaches. They're just like players. They'll miss stuff too. And I actually remember one time, I was doing a three person officiating game. So like typically high school, they would do two person, mm-hmm. but at the higher level, they have three refs on the court. And I was very new. I was very new to this and, new to college anyway. And there was the game was going on. I was with some senior officials and nothing was happening where I was, nothing was happening. So I felt like, oh my God, like, am I not doing my job? Like what's going on? So I remember, it was quarters there, and it was almost the end of the first quarter. I had not blown my whistle once and I actually, something happened and I blew my whistle and I called a foul and it was a terrible call. And the coach from the team is like, ref. I'm like, coach, I'll talk to you in a second. Just wait till a stoppage and play. He actually called a timeout because he wanted to like rip me apart. So he was like, okay, if there's not gonna be a stoppage and play, like I'm gonna make a stoppage and play. So he calls a timeout and I was actually with the other officials. And I said, I'm gonna go talk to him. They're like, don't go there. I'm like, no, I'm good. Cause they knew I made a terrible call. So yeah. They're like, whatever you get, you're going to deserve. So just don't even go over there. So I actually, coach is like yelling at me. He's on my case. And I went over to him. I said, coach, there is literally nothing to argue about. That was a terrible call. So I'll make sure I do better. And he just looked at me and he like patted me on the back and that was it. And he kind of like, I felt like he kind of, he knew he wasted a timeout. Right. Cause it was like, I agreed with him. Right. And it was good. Like what is he going to say? Yeah. It was a terrible call. I'm like, yeah, I know. I can't, that's it. It's done. Like, I can't do anything about it now. Right. All I can do is get better here. And it was amazing that, I was always like comfortable, saying like, oh, you know what? I was out of position or, he made a call. And I think as a coach, I appreciated when a ref blew something and they would actually say, you know what? And then, cause like, what is there to say after that? There's no argument too. So, I think it's partly that you have a vulnerability about this too. Now, if I'm doing that 18 times a game, that's a whole different story.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right?
But it was like, yeah, of course, we all make little mistakes. We all have like issues, but I think that some of the, refs that we used to have issues with would make those mistakes and pretend they didn't. And I think that to me was a real struggle. And I had no issue saying like, yeah, I blew that call. Cause sometimes when they get mad and I didn't blow the call, I'm like, yeah, no, that was the right call. Like I have an angle you don't. So.
Yeah. That's what I've always found is that the refs that I respect the most, and I respect all refs. I'll get on some, from time to time, cause that's what I get paid to do, I think. But anyway, like when a ref comes over, like you said, and says, hey, I missed that one, or yes, that was a bad call. There's not a whole lot that I'll say other than, okay, I appreciate that. And we can move on. This is going to be an argument between the two of us and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like I think it actually like, what else could you say?
Yeah.
Like you just double that. Yeah. No, that was a terrible call. Yeah. I just told you that.
Like, exactly.
I don't know why you're telling me again. I just said it. Right. Like, I agree. Yeah.
So, and we might talk a little bit more about reffing, but, sure. I just want to talk to you a little bit about the idea of, what you preach and how maybe coaches could apply that in their profession or their program. I'm sure you see this in education, probably mm-hmm. other industries that you talk to, that people are kind of scared to innovate. All right. And right. so what have you found is a reason why like a lot of people are scared of that idea of innovation or to innovate?
Well, I think part of it too is that it's just really easy to kind of stick with what you know and what you're comfortable with, right? And so I was actually thinking about this because you'd shared some of the questions, and actually when I first read it, I was like, what does that even look like? You know, like I've talked about that notion of innovation, you know, in education, but not necessarily like coaching, right? Mm-hmm. Or basketball or things like that. And as I mentioned before, I played and I was thinking about this. I played for several years and I am I'm tall when I played, but I'm not jumping out of the gym or anything like that. I could dunk. Just got to throw that out there. No more. That's like my dream, you know, like one day I'm going to get back into good enough shape and my knees will be fixed that I can just dunk one more time in my life. But I was actually, so I wasn't a very athletic person, but I was actually, I would say, you know, a pretty intelligent player. Like I, you know, could make plays. And so when I was thinking about this, we ran like a flex offense. And I don't know if anyone runs a flex. I'm sure if you coach long enough, you've come across that, you know, offense. And our coach like drilled it into us that we actually had to know it basically inside out, right? Like you just had to know that. And one of the things that I really benefited was I knew it so well that I could run it so well that you would kind of get into these patterns of movements where you'd go and the defense would actually pick that up where you're going, right? So they would actually start moving to a place where they knew you're already headed. And I think part of that too is when they realize that, that's where the innovation comes in, right? So I'm going up, you know, at the someone's screening down for me and the defense is already going to the top of the screen. I just, you know, cut in the back, right? And get open for a play. And so I could, you know, and then you start messing with people a little bit like that too. And so that was actually like the notion of innovation. A lot of people think that it's actually like the opposite of the basics, but I really truly believe it's a basic. So when you're thinking about, you know, your teams and your players, one of my focuses is that my players knew the stuff that I was teaching inside out so that when the situation came to actually innovate, to like kind of iterate on a situation, they could actually read that stuff. And it's the same, you know, when I talk about this in a classroom, you learn your students, you know who they are. And so maybe you've been doing something for 10 years and you're really good at it, but it's not working for this kid. How do you actually change that procedure, that process? So I think it's not, because I think a lot of people think it's like doing these like crazy, you know, new ideas that no one's ever thought about, but it's actually really knowing your stuff inside out, kind of like you know, a jazz musician. A lot of times they're known for improvisation, but it's like they just started doing whatever they wanted. But the reason they have that ability is because they know how to play so well. They know their basics. They know that part of it. So that gives them the ability to actually, you know, do different things at different times. And I think that's what we try to like instill in our players, is that they really knew these things and it was just kind of second nature. But then based on the team, how they're reacting to you, how do you actually change something that kind of just throws off that pattern a little bit to benefit what you're doing in that game?
It's interesting that you bring up jazz, because a person that I've had on the podcast a couple times, his name's Alex Sarama. He coaches in Europe. And so he likens, you know, that to the idea of jazz as a way that we want to get players to go. And he has some concepts that we are applying heavily in our program this season that is kind of along that, what you're talking about. And so one of the things that we've been doing is we've been showing kids just, you know, basic actions, but we've been showing them different defensive coverages and then the coverage solutions to all those. So we've been repping all those so that, like you said, you know it so well, or you start to see things that you can start to innovate on the court.
Yeah. And it's like, it's basically, you know, the stuff so well that you're part of it too, is it's second nature to you, that you are now really invested into the game and you're now starting to read reactions to the other team. And you're deciding that, again, like when I talk about this stuff in the classroom, it's the same as, how do I know my students? And, you know, I know my stuff so well that my student needs something a little bit of adjustment. How do I actually, you know, iterate in that space to benefit them? So it's the same thing with, you know, coaching, really kind of bringing that into play, is like knowing your stuff inside out. So that's really what I try to instill in my players. And yeah, and I was blessed to have like really, you know, great players over the years that, you know, it took a while to get them to that space, but once they did, that's when they started thriving. And it wasn't, I'm a big fan of Phil Jackson. It's kind of like, you know, it's a reaction, right? Like when you know when you got to push and when you got to, like, you know, step back, you know, and because the other team's pushing you so hard that sometimes their momentum actually, you can use it to your benefit too. So I think that to me is really, really important.
Yeah. So one of the things that I wrote down from your book, reading your book, is that, you know, you wrote change is an opportunity to do something amazing. And I think, you know, for some of us, we do want to change, but we don't know how, because I guess, you know, we just get so familiar, or, you know, we just are comforted by doing the same thing. So what are some things that you would say, you know, coaches could consider doing that might lead to some of that change that might make for something amazing?
Yeah, I think for me, and we were actually talking about this before, you and I both kind of grew up in a time where we didn't ski because, you know, winter, we both live in snowy places, but we were kind of told do not ski because, you know, like, we don't want you getting hurt for basketball.
Yeah, you're going to blow out your knee.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah. No, I did blow out my knee and I never skied, right? So,
right.
So I think part of it too is that I feel there's like a huge benefit of players actually not being so focused on the one sport. And a lot of coaches are, you know, a little fearful of that it actually, you know, is to the detriment that if not playing basketball the entire season, then, you know, people are going to actually develop at a different pace. But I think, you know, you do learn things from other sports that you play, right? Like you look at one of the coaches, he had a small, like, I'm telling you, they had probably 20 female athletes, or actually 20 female students. I'm not even kidding. From grade 9 to grade 12 in their school. That was it. Like, it was a very small town. And he actually ran one of the most impressive basketball programs I've ever seen. And one of the things that he did is that all the girls on the team had to play soccer. So it was like kind of a condition to play on the basketball team. And so the reason that they played soccer, and he was adamant about it, was footwork. And Hakeem Olajuwon is, like, he's known as probably having the best footwork of any, you know, big man ever to play the game. And he was a soccer player, right? Steve Nash, soccer player, and endurance, right? So just constant cardio. And his program was unbelievable. And even like when, like, I remember this because I played in high school the same time his program, and, they used to do like meditation and, you know, visualization before games. And, you know, I'm in like late 80s, early 90s kid. And we're like, oh my God, what's going on with these crazy things that they're doing? But they actually could beat anyone in our province. Like they actually moved up several levels because they were just so destroying everyone that actually the same school size. And they had won, I think, 6-7 years in a row. At a higher level because of all these things that he did that had nothing to do with basketball, right? And we were kind of just trained to think, like, you know, if you want to get better at basketball, you got to play basketball all the time. And, you know, again, growing up in Canada, one of the things, Wayne Gretzky, who is the best hockey player, I don't even think it's close, best hockey player ever. People might like other people more, but his statistics are ridiculous. He is a big advocate of playing other sports to make you better in the one that you're most passionate about, that you learn all these different elements, right? Like playing us, like, you notice when you play soccer, when I watch it, some of the things that they do are very similar to running an offense in basketball. If you start to pick those things up, right. And so it's just kind of reading those things. So I think for me, it's embracing and looking at things outside. It's kind of the same thing that I do for education. A lot of my ideas I've actually gleaned from other areas and saying, okay, how does this apply to education? Because I think when we become so education centric, we start losing, you know, all the learning that other organizations are benefiting from and how we actually apply them to what we do. So I think for me, that's really kind of what I like to see a little bit more. And I think it just makes for a more well-rounded, you know, person to actually have access to those things and, you know, kind of see how that develops you in different ways.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up soccer because anecdotally, I can say that it translates so well, the two sports that, you know, anytime that we bring in a soccer player that's new to basketball, in fact, we have one in our program this year, like, the learning curve is so much quicker for her because she understands those spacing, she understands cuts. And so, you know,
And, you know, I guess one of the things that you're noticing is that coaches are looking outside the sports, not just soccer, but other places where there might be some of the same elements or similar elements that can apply.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of like I actually run quite a bit, and I remember I ran my first marathon, and I ran it in 4 hours and 20 minutes. And I, like, you know, I lost a ton of weight. So it was like pretty big deal that I ran it that quick. And then about 4 or 5 months later, I ran it in 3:18. So I actually ran it an hour quicker and finished 10th overall. And actually what I had changed about my training, the only thing I changed, is actually I ran less and I did spin, 3 times a week. So the thing was, when I actually ran up hills, it actually was way easier on me because I had developed different muscles. I had like worked on different muscles through that process. So I remember actually in that first marathon, I was running up hills, and I honestly felt someone was just stabbing my quad every, I remember that. I'm like, oh my God, this hurts. And then in that next race, I actually was like passing people on hills. And the only thing I actually did is I actually added biking, and it was actually like, so I kept my cardio up, but I just developed different muscles. So I think that too, like you start to actually realize that some of those things benefit you in different ways. Like soccer player, not only do they actually read that, but, you know, like, as I said earlier, their footwork's probably way better because, you know, it's something that, and we don't necessarily equate it to that, but it does benefit tremendously.
No, for sure. So, you know, and I'm guessing with what you teach, the idea of innovation, that you probably get this at the different places that you speak at, is especially with teachers that are kind of set in their ways, and they hear kind of some of your examples that you give. And then I know, you know, when you're in Sandpoint, it was like, well, why does my kid have to get Twitter? And you're like, no, that's not what I mean.
Right,
so
right.
I kind of base this question on that idea that we want to look outside. I love that because I do the same thing. But how can you like create that filter so that you're not like taking everything and throwing it, and, you know, so that there's like some rhythm to it that it's actually going to apply?
Yeah, I think it's actually just kind of asking yourself, like, what is working? Like, what is working right now? And identifying those things. Like, what are the things that we're really good at? And I think for me, it's really kind of always starting at that place of strengths. I used to get on people in such a, you know, hard way when they actually, you know, would not necessarily embrace the stuff that I was talking about. And basically you would often make them feel very insecure, because, you'd get on for, you know, what they couldn't do. And so I think for me, what I try to do is really kind of focus on like, what are people good at right now? And even like going back to Phil Jackson, when I've read a lot of his stuff in the past. And one of the things that he did that was really interesting was basically when he was the coach of the Bulls, and he probably did this with the Lakers as well, he actually had every player on his team, he would give them different books, right? He wouldn't give everyone the same book. He would give it based on what does that person need, right? And kind of understanding where you're at and like, how could you benefit, right? So like we do this in education all the time, where like everyone has to read the same book. You might have actually got my book, you know, and like, as much as I think you should have, right? I also think it's a good opportunity to, you know, to kind of know the people that you're serving. And I think it's really kind of like understanding where people are and moving backwards from there, as opposed to what are you, you know, trying to do. And so I always try to focus on like, what are we really good at first, and ensure people feel valued. And when you actually have people feel valued and they start to develop like confidence and competence, what I actually think that does is really gets them to try things that maybe are new to them. But if you constantly tell people like, oh, we suck at this, we suck at this, we suck at this, but you should try something new, well, it's not really a great place to start. So I think part of it is just kind of making sure people feel valued, and that's your players too. You know, what are their gifts to the, you know, team? Like, I actually remember one of my players, like I coached in Canada. Okay. So like just a different scenario than coaching basketball in the United States, right? So like we would have, you know, we'd have like tryouts for a team, you know, of 12 players and we get 11, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't like people were dying to play basketball where I lived, right? And I remember actually one year there was a kid on our team. Actually, I'll say his name. His name is Peter. I won't say his last name, but he came out for the basketball team. He was terrible. Like he was so brutal. Like he is, but I taught him too. So I taught him. He was like, he was terrible. He was beyond terrible. And he was very awkward. And he didn't have, honestly, like I taught him too. So he didn't have any friends like in class, but he was like a really interesting kid. And he was like really unique. And he had like kind of like a little sly sense of humor. And I actually, he tried out for the basketball team and I pulled him aside. I said, look, I'm going to tell you straight up. I want you in this basketball team. You're going to get like no playing time. Like this is not your thing, but I think it'd be really good for you. And here's what I need from you. You actually are very athletic. You're very fast, not very skilled at basketballs. Like you cannot shoot or anything. And, but here's what I need from you. I need you in the practice. You need to like be like a defensive monster. You have to give like our players a really hard time. And I knew he could do that, right? And he really pushed. He was like, you know, when we do like any like drills, he'd be pushing himself for. And so like me like being honest with him, but also like acknowledging what he was really good at and how he can contribute to the team actually made a huge difference. And he was like he was not, you know, we were a very competitive basketball team. We had kids like, you know, vying for scholarships, all that stuff too. And I remember we were playing a game and we were up quite a bit and put him in at the end. And I'm like, and this, he has not scored a basket the entire year. Right. And I'm like, if you get the ball on the other half, like on our side, of like when we're playing offense in the half, I don't care where you are, shoot. Just shoot the ball, right? Like, don't dribble it because you're going to lose it. Shoot the ball. So he gets like our team's like vying for him. He gets the ball right behind the 3-point line, throws up the ugliest shot ever. Boom, swish in front of our whole, like our whole high school is there. It was amazing. They're all like going nuts for him. Right. And like, I'm just so excited. I'm like, okay, I'm going to pull him off. Like let him have that moment. They're all going to cheer for him off. So play goes on, you know, he's like so excited, you know, he can't focus. He's like smiling on defense, which is like my favorite visual I've ever had. And then we go down the court again and he gets the ball. He's like 10 feet behind the 3-point line, throws up, boom, swishes in front of it. Everyone's going nuts. I'm like, maybe I should have been playing this kid. Like, what the heck is going on? Like, how is he hitting these threes? Right. And I remember that. Like he was so excited. The team was so excited. The school is so excited. And I remember seeing him the next day at school and he was like a god. It was amazing. And everyone loved him. And he actually turned out having like a really great, like he had a totally different, you know, reaction in school. He all of a sudden started hanging out with people. Like I saw him develop into like a totally different kid. And it was all because I don't want to say it's all because, but I saw something in him that he can contribute to the team, that he wasn't just there out of pity. But I'm like, hey, you're not like, you've never played basketball before. Here's how you can contribute. And he felt like he was part of something. Even when he wasn't playing, he was like the loudest cheerleader. And I remember this kid who like never played, you know, probably 10 minutes that whole season. We actually ended the season and he came up to me and said, see, you're a good coach. And that's all he said. And I just like started crying and I was like, oh my God, like leave me alone. And I like watched him get married and stuff like that too. And, you know, I think it's when a lot of times when people are trying new things, we kind of focus on what they can't do. But I think the best way to start is focus on what they can do and move from there.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting point that you were making. And I know several of the teachers here in our building have taken that to heart, is that, you know, sometimes we want to say like all kids need to come out as this one like package, right? Like everybody looks the same. That's not the reality of the situation. So what, you know, you gave a great story there, or an example there, but I was kind of wondering what are some, and I would say that that's like player centric coaching.
Right.
You know, so like, right. What are some other ways that coaches could maybe be a little more player centric? Because I think that is something that we are having to face
as basketball coaches in a lot of these communities is that we have to have a place where kids feel welcome. They're not just showing up.
Yeah. And I think it goes kind of go back to that approach. I would always try to ensure that everyone knew they had not only a role on the team, but they had a gift to contribute, right? Like they were actually part of something, whether they played, you know, the majority of the game, whether they were starting, whether they were coming off the bench, whether they were not playing at all. And I think a lot of times it's really kind of understanding those, the kids and the, you know, the players that we actually serve on that team, because at the end of the day, and I used to say this to my team all the time, there is only one team in our whole league that's going to win the championship. That's it. So if we actually base our success 100% on us winning that championship and we don't hit it, then we're just going to consider ourselves failures every year. So my hope is that when you look at all of the things that we do on this team and how you develop as a person, how you develop skills, that to me is where the most success comes from, right? And I look at that, like I look at a lot of the things that I do today. I get to travel all over the world and speak, and it's like a blessing. I contribute so much of that to my high school basketball coach, right? Like I contribute so much of that to how it's developed, how I saw leadership, you know, being part of a team, working with other people. And so I think part of it too is that we're trying to really help our players identify their gifts and like having those one-on-one times and not just like seeing them as contributors to a larger goal, but that they contribute something different. And I think that just takes conversations, that takes getting to know your players and things like that too. And not necessarily like, hey, we play everyone equal. Everyone needs to be able to do this. Not everyone is able to do the same things, right? And we recognize that, right? Not everyone's Michael Jordan, right? And so, and that's okay, right? Like the thing with Michael Jordan is he never won any championships until he started actually becoming more team-centric too, right? Like he saw that, hey, other players contribute different things.
I just finished up with a class and I'm having kids create these audio slideshows. And so I left it pretty loose that it's just like, three things people should know about Sandpoint High School, and you got to have a photo that reflects on that. And they really, really struggled. Some of the kids like really, really struggled. Like, how do I put this into a picture? And I think, you know, in large part, it's just like something that they hadn't done before, something they hadn't thought about. And then, you know, and one of the questions that I sent to you was that I've got a player, she's new to the game, and she's been great. She's been coming to practices. She works really hard. But on the other hand, she told me the other day, like, I have a hard time let myself go because she wants to be perfect on everything. Right. So how can I approach helping the player or my students adjust that mindset? Because I know sometimes they get that paralysis by analysis that they're just thinking like, I've got to do this perfect. It's not going to be acceptable if there's some issues there. What are some things that I can do to kind of ease or create an environment where kids feel okay to, hey, I'm going to fail. And I'm going to fail a lot.
Yeah. And so when I read this question, when I saw that you shared it, I struggle with this, and I'll tell you why. I am a perfectionist, and I struggle with that in myself. And so like I exercise quite a bit. And the thing is, when you're lifting weights, being perfect with your form is actually more important than it is to lift heavy weights, right? Like your form really, really matters. So like every rep that you're actually trying to take, you are striving for perfection, right? And I'm like, I'm a Kobe guy. I'm a Jordan guy. Don't tell me these guys weren't striving for perfection, right?
Right, yeah.
And so to me, I think I wrote about this one time, and I was talking about that everything I try to do, I actually do strive for perfection. I do strive for perfection, but I think it's the idea that I also understand I'll never get there. But in the pursuit of that, that's where you actually start to grow. And I think that's what you're trying to actually develop, is that it's actually good that you want to be perfect on your form. It's actually good that you're, you know, being thoughtful of how you play defense and that you're putting in your best effort every single day. And you're doing that. But it is actually a thing that is totally unattainable. But in the sense that if you're continuously pursuing it, that's where your growth actually happens. So I think, you know, like I struggle with that because I also know not everyone's wired that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but I think it is seeing it as that, yeah, we are striving, it, you know, like even thinking about the, what, I don't know what, it was like a Denzel Washington. It was like a football movie. He's like, we're going to be perfect. Right. And I think that to me is that we are trying to be perfect in the moments. Like we are trying to be perfect, you know, in our form, like little things like that. But as it is an element of growth, like I shoot. I make sure that every week I go play basketball and I just shoot I shoot by myself, and I am 47 years old. I still like focus on my form for how I shoot a basketball to this day. And I like, you know, pick up little things. I'm just striving to get better. And I keep telling my wife, I'm like, I actually think I'm a pretty good 3-point shooter now. Right. Like I'm way better when I was a kid for sure. And it's like constantly tweaking stuff to strive for perfection, but it is part of that growth, right? That is that pursuit of perfection is it is the learning that you're supposed to focus on, not the attainment, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It makes me think something I tell my kids both in the classroom and on the court. It's something I didn't come up with. It was Ira Glass, the journalist. But anyway, he talked about the idea that we've got taste and our taste is like way, way up here. So we know what good stuff looks like. Unfortunately, our abilities usually are down low. And so here, you know, each day you come to practice, we're trying to get our abilities closer and closer to our taste. The taste that you have, and then eventually we want to start raising that where that taste is at.
Yeah, totally. And it's actually funny because as I'm like talking to you, you see my education books, you see like the Orlando Magic stuff behind me. Mm-hmm. But over to my left, which you can't see, I actually have a giant Jordan poster, and all it says is mindset. That's it. It's mm-hmm. just Jordan, he's like looking, and it's actually that mentality that we're trying to develop, I think, in ourselves. For me, one of the things that I was really cognizant of as a player and a coach is always give credit and never, and actually, you know, and take blame easily. Right. So, you make the perfect pass to one of your teammates and they mess it up or miss something. Right. And just easily saying like, my bad, like just saying that, even though it probably isn't, you know, you made that pass, but if you get on that player, what's going to happen? They're more likely going to miss the next one. Cause they're getting anxiety and stuff like that too. So I think part of it too, is how do we actually, you know, as we are trying to be better, how do we ensure that the people that we're playing, you know, with the people that we're coaching get better. And I just shared this story on the weekend. You know, when you think of, you know, from the coaching perspective, I remember actually saw, I think it was Jay Triano. Jay Triano was the national coach in Canada, national team coach. He actually coached the Raptors for a little while before they won the championship, right? Go Raptors. And I remember listening to a coach listening to him at a clinic. And he said, you know, when a player misses a free throw, literally the worst thing you can say it is like, you know, hey, you got to make that shot. And it's like, what? Did you think the player was like trying to miss a shot? Like, yeah, everyone knows they're trying to make that shot. Right. And so that doesn't actually help them. It actually sets them up for, you know, missing the next one. Cause you're actually like putting more pressure on them too. Right. And it's, you know, I remember my coach, he would never say that to me. If I missed a shot, he'd say like, Hey, you're a little tired. Make sure you bend your knees. He'd like give you feedback that you could apply right away. And that to me was, that's one of the things that we try to do as coaches is like, don't, you know, don't get on a kid for missing, don't get on a ref for missing, right? It's like, what's the feedback you can provide that actually helps them get better for the next play?
Yeah, a term that my assistant coach uses, and I don't know if she picked this up, she played Division I basketball at the University of Montana. But anytime a kid misses like a bunny, you know, mm-hmm. one of those ones that, you know, as coaches were like, you should make that. She always says unlucky. Unlucky, you know, that was unlucky. You'll get the next one. And I just love that mentality that she's kind of bringing.
Well, I love it. Love it.
Yeah. So here, we've got a few more questions for you. I really appreciate your time. And so one of the things that I've been kind of focusing on myself, and I spent the summer, now that I'm in school and coaching, I don't have as much time, but that idea of reflection. And so you talk about that in your book and why that's so important. So can you just give us some thoughts there on like why reflection is so important and how coaches might be able to utilize that to build themselves up?
Yeah, I think a lot of times when we, you know, we're constantly looking for it. And this is actually tied into, like, a lot of people, again, when you're looking at innovation, it's the idea of, like, being future focused, right? Like, how do we constantly move forward? And for me, I think part of it is actually how do we look back and kind of learn and grow and actually take what we're doing and actually apply it to the next level. And so, you know, you look at some of the stuff that we do coaching in the game. What are some of the things that we could actually do better? And I remember, I'm sure you've had this too, and you could probably point to a couple of things in your life. You have these moments where one person says like a sentence to you and it changes your trajectory forever, right? You just have a moment, right? And we were kind of talking before, about reffing. And I coached, and I think it was in my first year of coaching. And I'm intrigued by like the Phil Jacksons of the world, right? The NBA coaches, watch them, you know, growing up. And what do they do all the time? Scream and yell at the refs, right? That's what they see. So I'm a coach, and what do I start doing? I start screaming and yelling at the refs, right? And I'm probably in my like fifth or sixth game. And I actually was very good about this. I could actually, and I know probably a lot of coaches listening to this are good at this too. I could push a ref to a point where I'd get on their nerves, but they wouldn't give me a tech, right? So like, you just kind of know that line, right? You kind of know that line. And it was funny because I actually had like, this is my first year of coaching high school basketball. I was getting really frustrated with my players because my players didn't know the line, right? So they'd start yelling at the refs. They start doing stuff. They'd get texts, get us in trouble and stuff. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, let me do this. This is my job, right? And I remember, it was like I said, it was fifth game or so. This ref was doing a game. Now, you know, being a small town, I'm sure you have this too. This is a ref who I knew because he coached football. And I also coached football. So we had like batted heads there too. Now he's a ref. So I think he hates me as it is, right? Because like we, you know, beat him in football that year, et cetera. And I remember I was getting on him and there's a timeout and he came out to me and he said, you know what? I actually really appreciate how much you love these players. I can tell how much you love basketball, but I want you to know this, whether you scream at me or you don't, these kids look up to you and they're going to follow your lead. And so what's the example you want to set? And I'll tell you, I looked at it, I'm like, oh, now I get why they're yelling at the refs. They're just doing what I'm doing. They're following me, but they don't have the maturity or control to like filter this. And I'll tell you, I actually never yelled at a ref ever again. Not once. Never got on their case, anything like that. But would I ask some questions? Would I be polite and respectful and do it? Yeah. Would I get some calls going my way because of how my interactions were? 100%. And I think that to me was, I had a willingness to kind of look back and understand like, okay, what am I actually doing here that is actually hurting us? And looking at that, and I think that's how we started moving forward. That's when we started getting really good, is because they took my lead after that too. And everyone stopped yelling at the refs, start doing that stuff too. But if I didn't have that sense of reflection, because I could have just, you know, whatever, not listened to that ref, moved on. And just thought he was an idiot, blah, blah, blah. But I was like, oh, but he actually, the thing that he did was pretty smart. The first thing he did was compliment me, right? He focused, he made me feel valued. Like he recognized I was passionate. And so he didn't come at me from a negative stance. And like, I learned a lot from that interaction. And it you know, I'll tell you, I reffed while I was a principal. And the overlap between the two were like amazing. Like I never had, like when parents are mad at me, I'm like, hey, you know, you might be yelling at me, but you know, at least I'm not running and sweaty. So like I can handle this, right? Like this is nothing, right? Yeah. Like people are screaming at me yesterday. You get mad at me for a little bit here. It's not as big a deal. Right. So yeah, you just kind of, I think a lot of that too, you actually, I'm sure, if any of you follow or read my blog, you'll see I talk a lot about, you know, my reffing and coaching and how it's like I look back at those things and say, like, how does this apply to education? How does this apply to my work? And there's so many like things, but I think I get better because I do have to take the time to make sure that I look back.
All right. So I crowdsourced this question here. And so this is from our girls soccer coach. And so
I think kind of based on your visit to Sandpoint High School, he asks, as a proponent of social media, as part of educators connecting with students, how would you incorporate social media into a sports team?
Oh, that's an easy one. I've actually been suggesting this forever. So I'm sure you probably have captains on your team, right? And so one of the crucial elements of being a captain is communication, right? Your ability to communicate. Well, social media is the ability to communicate, right? It's how you actually connect. So one of the things that what I've worked with coaches on this and talked about them, I'm like, listen, I know you got a million things to do. The last thing you want to do is be running a Twitter, Instagram account, promoting your team and all those other things. Get your captains to do that. So part of it is too, is like, hey, communication is part of this. We're going to actually have you running our social media accounts and talk about some of the things. And we want, you know, obviously you don't just represent our team. This team represents the school. So we have to be cognizant of that. But also because of this, you are also responsible for how our teammates actually communicate on social media as well. And so if you see anything that you think is inappropriate, I need you to deal with it. If you need my support, I gotcha. But you are to kind of keep that line. A lot of times, you know, they actually have, you know, students have a better understanding of social media there too, because I think it's part of it. I actually remember this. This coach was talking to me and he was telling about one of his players was being scouted. I think it was for baseball actually. And so they're being scouted for baseball. And you can see the scout was there, you know, they're thinking of college scholarships, all this other stuff. So they're watching, writing notes, blah, blah, blah. And actually was very interested in the player. They knew this, right? So what does the scout do? Pulls out his phone and goes and finds the kid on social media and is like, looking, what are you doing on social media? What are you doing in the space? Because a lot of kids right now are losing opportunities because of how they communicate in social media. And so the mentality for a lot of coaches is like, yeah, that is happening. So what we're going to do is we're going to get them off of there. Like, we don't want them to have any actually presence in that space. It's not going to happen, by the way. Right. So they might not have a presence you can find, but they have one. Right. And so they do this. And so the mentality is that we are going to actually have them share nothing. And my mentality has been, we're actually going to teach them how to share really good stuff. So actually, when you see that player and you're bringing up the social media, you're not disappointed. You're actually impressed. You're like, wow, look at how this person, like, look at how they communicate. Look how they connect. Look at how they like talk to other people, how they're respectful. And I'm sure, do you remember the story I told about the kids that were sharing super negative things about me?
So I'll
share this just really briefly with all of you that are listening. I was actually speaking at a high school event, and there's three kids anonymously sharing something totally like horrendously inappropriate tweets while I was speaking, and I knew it was going on. And
on a hashtag that you were using.
I actually told them my hashtag, my Twitter handle. So they're making sure I see it, right? But the other people that are seeing it are all the other students. The people who aren't seeing it are all the educators in the room who don't do social media because they think it's stupid, right? So the only adult who knows what's going on is the only adult who doesn't know anybody in this room, right?
Yeah.
So I tell that story, and then a kid actually shared something really powerful. And what was amazing, he said something along the lines of like, hey, I appreciate your message. It's really entertaining and informative. Thank you for being here. Right. And he made sure I saw it too. So I actually called that kid out and I thanked him. And I was like very sincere. And he actually, what was amazing is that once he did that, all the other kids in the assembly, what do? Start bombarding the hashtag with super nice things. Right. And part of it is because of his lead. Part of it because I think they also wanted the recognition, right? They wanted to, you know, be called out. Because I'm not the kids that tweeted inappropriate things, they're not getting any of my time. And what's so appreciative about this kid was a high school basketball player. And he knew one slip up there could actually cost him everything. And he is like, he just got married. He's probably 24, 25 years old. It's amazing. He likes my posts of my kids. Him and I stayed connected from that one tweet to this day. He played college basketball. I would like bug him. I'm like, can I get a jersey? Like your jersey? Like, I like hook me up. Right. He played for, I think, Western Michigan Broncos. And like, I'll message him every now and then just saying something like something. And he'll say, he always goes, sir, thank you, sir. And he's just a respectful kid. And I just, like, I root for that kid. Like, I root for that kid. Whereas I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know where those other three kids are, nor do I care. Like, do what you do, right? And so I think there's part of that too, is like, how are we actually ensuring that our kids, when they're using the stuff, how are they elevating just the way we expect? We don't expect our captains just to exist. We expect them to elevate. And that's the kind of the expectation. And that makes everyone else better on the team. So that's a long answer is how I'd use this. But again, and not only is it beneficial to your players, it's something taking, you know, off the plate of, you know, your athletic director, your coach, whatever. Like, let the students use that. They probably are more comfortable with it, can probably do some more creative things. And it is kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, after your talk, it's, you know, our program has a couple of social, we've got a Twitter account and Instagram account, but after you came and talked, I was like, well, you know, especially that idea of where are the kids at? And they aren't necessarily on Twitter. They aren't necessarily on Instagram. You know, they're on TikTok. And TikTok. You know, I was like, well, why am I limiting, you know, our ability to reach these kids? Cause that's what I'm doing, is I'm saying, yep, no, we'll do this, but I know most of the kids aren't there. We're going to avoid this. And so, you know, we've allowed the captains to start a TikTok account for our program. And then the other thing is that last night I gave them 10 minutes in practice and said, okay, go make some content, and just do that. And so, you know, and as I was watching them, it was like, man, what a great leadership opportunity I've given these two girls to kind of get their teammates together. You know, they had to go through, figure it out, and they had 10 minutes and they did a great job.
Well, we're here in Orlando. I'm not even kidding. So we confirmed that we were buying a house, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, Kate, paperwork signed, blah, blah, blah. What do I do? Call the Orlando Magic. I want season tickets. It's like been my dream to like be able to go to NBA games. And we love it. Like I love going to see the Magic play. And they're like, they won last night. We went to see them play the Mavericks, and they Banchero didn't play. And I was like, oh, they're going to get killed. And they actually won. I couldn't all believe right. it. And they're just so fun to watch and stuff like that. But like they also just do such an incredible job with their social media. And it's like weird, cause you feel like, I feel like more connected with them. Right. Like I'm more invested in the team, like kind of doing that. And it's like, how do we actually teach our students to do that too? Cause, you know, get more pride in the community. Like I remember we used to be made fun of when we play basketball, you know, in Canada, right? Like, you know, like basketball is like a stupid sport there. Right. And just kind of thinking about how that's shifted. And they're connecting. And even if you look at when the Raptors won, it was one of the proudest days for me as a Canadian, honestly, because it wasn't that the Raptors won and like we only got the one team, NBA team in Canada. But for the first time, I felt basketball was accepted in Canada. Like it was actually not just accepted, but it was like appreciated. And like people are like diehard Raptor fans. And one of the big shifts that happened was they started this hashtag basically called, and it's called We the North, right? So it's like, it's basically Canada versus everybody in the US, right? So like, we're the underdogs, like you make fun of us for living in snow and all this other stuff. And so like, how do we and it was actually interesting because that We the North is like galvanized that fan base, right? And you can see this actually can really bring people together. Like we even, I have a 2-year-old, so I'm like desperately trying to get my kids into like watching basketball. Right. So I can have someone to go to the game with. Right. And, my 2-year-old, she actually, is super into the weird green mascot. It's called Stuff. Right. And he's got the little flaring nostrils and things like that. And I posted about how much I took my whole family to the game. I posted about how much we enjoyed it, things like that. I tagged Matt the mascot on Instagram. The mascot liked my post. And then I'm like, I didn't even know that, like, I didn't even know they had an Instagram. And then all of a sudden, you know, my kids are like interested because, you know, they're like connecting and they're like looking at, you know, what Stuff is sharing on their social media and like just all those things, like, it can actually really bring a community together. And it's just kind of like building it, you know, beyond the game, which is kind of cool. Cause it, you know, like, I think one of the best things we can do with social media is build community, you know, beyond the team. Right. And I think that there's a power in that.
Yeah. And I thought that was a great point that you made when you're here in Sandpoint, is that, you know, you like, and I'm thinking about this in coaching, is that, you know, like, parents don't come to our practices for 2 hours and sit there and watch. Like, they don't know what's going on, versus this is a medium that we can use to get that message out. Like, they can actually see what their kids are doing, and probably through those videos over time, see, you know, hopefully that there's development going on, and how are you doing that? And then, you know, another thing that's important is that you're kind of controlling a narrative or creating a narrative there.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that is one of the best things, right? Because a lot of times they just see the end product, right? They see the game, right? They don't know all the stuff that's going on, all the stuff that actually, you know, I love playing basketball. I loved it. I think I even said it, like, honestly, if I could have like one more year of high school basketball to play, like, I would trade a lot for that. Right. But it wasn't just the game. It was like, it was the van trips, right? It was sitting with my coaches at dinner and messing around and things like that. And just, you know, all of those other elements that really make up that people don't understand or appreciate. And I think we can kind of, like, you know, bring some of that into, like, how important this, you know, the sports are to, you know, our kids' development, to ourselves, and, you know, our community. I think it can bring people together. It's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah. Well, George, I really appreciate your time. And this has been really great to follow up on, you know, after you came to town and be able to talk to you about some of these ideas and stuff like that. And I just appreciate that I got in contact with you. So if somebody's listening out there, what are the best ways to kind of, you know, find you?
Yeah. So you can just, you know, I know it's kind of maybe like, you can just Google me, George Kuros, you'll find me, and you'll find my website. You'll find my books, Innovator's Mindset Because of a Teacher, Innovates of the Box, all that stuff. But I'm, you know, like on Twitter, Instagram, stuff like that. I always say, if you're going to follow me on Instagram, like, be prepared for like baby and puppy pictures. Like, you're not going to be better at anything, but if you need like a, you know, maybe a smile once in a while, that's what I try to do. I try not to take that seriously, but I also, I think it's one of the things, maybe, when I look at my Instagram specifically, that is like a story I'm leaving to my kids, right? I really want them to one day be able to look and say, like it's kind of like a photo album I'm leaving to my kids with videos and all these other things, so they can learn more about me, you know, after I'm gone. And that's kind of a, you know, that's how I look at it. So I'm always thoughtful of how I communicate in that space.
All right. Well, thanks again, and good luck with the storm.
Hey, thanks, my friend.